You're listening to Now You Know, talk radio where you get to ask the questions. Call us now at 877-NYK-RADIO. That's 877-695-7234. And now, here are your hosts, Ann Mitchell and Brian McCullough.
Hey,
well,
Brian,
Ann, I guess you get top billing, but I always seem to talk first, so I don't know how that happens.
But. Yeah, but that's true.
Welcome.
Now I have to think for a minute.
So how you been?
Hey,
it's been about a week since we talked.
No. You have to let everyone think that we talk all the time.
Well, we communicate all the time, right? I mean, in this technologically advanced world, we communicate about 37 different ways during the week. But I don't want to mislead folks. We actually talk to each other mostly just on the show. So I mean, I look forward to that because I get to hear your voice. You know, I get tired of reading your messages all week. I want to hear you. I want to talk to you.
Did you just say you get tired of reading my messages, Brian?
Only because it's not the same as actually hearing your melodic tones.
Oh, nice save. You are so clearly a married man.
Yes, that's right.
Hey, I am really excited about our guest tonight, and do you know that the chat room is already filling up? I don't know if everyone who's listening knows, but you can actually also go to our chat room at the blogtalkradio.com/nowyouknow site so that you can communicate with each other and talk and make fun of us and razz us and all kinds of things. Hey, you know, you might even get a Now You Know hookup.
Oh, well, you know, whatever it takes, we'll be happy to help out. If you do want to call in, though, we really want you to call in because we've got some exciting topics tonight. That's 877-NYK-RADIO. That's 877-695-7234. Of course, like Ann said, you can post your questions in the chat room if you like. You can tweet us at Now You Know Radio. Is that right?
That is right.
Okay.
That is right.
I really love that. That's so exciting. It's just so
to
cool
be tweeted.
To be tweeted. I mean, I used to have to pay for that, but okay, go ahead.
I just want to make sure, too, that it's very clear to everybody. The NYK, that's for Now You Know. So it's 877 Now You Know Radio. Isn't that cute? I'm really proud of that.
No, it's very cool.
Not a lot of radio talk shows where you can call in and talk to the expert guest live also give you a toll-free number to do it. So we are in the big leagues, let me just say.
We're a full-service internet radio show. I mean, there's no getting around it. And what's exciting for those of us who maybe, or those of you who haven't heard our show before, what's great about this show is that we find experts in different fields every week, and we bring them in and then allow you to ask them questions directly. And so it's not a technology show or a fitness show or a geology show. You know, it could be any of those. And so that's really exciting. And tonight I'm really excited about our guest because this is something that I struggle with on an hourly basis. And so why don't you let us know who the wonderful guest is tonight.
You know, Brian, I really appreciate that you always let me introduce the guests. And sometime, if you'd like, you can do that too. But I'm going to take it because you're letting me. And plus, let's face it, this is a topic that, while it is applicable to men and women, it's, I have to say, probably really close to many women's hearts out there. Maybe men too. I'm speaking for the women because, hey, I am one. But the topic, eat your way to happiness. I love that because we have been told, particularly as women in this society, that the last thing you should do is try to find solace and comfort in food. And so I'm very excited to announce and introduce our guest, Betsy Sheffield. She has a background in nutrition and wellness and nutritional therapy, and the thing I love most about her is that she bills herself as a down-home Southern girl who considers macaroni and cheese one of the four food groups. Do I have that right, Betsy?
That's right. I love mac and
Betsy,
cheese.
Betsy, tell us a little bit about your background and also about eating your way to happiness.
Sure. Well, I have to say, if you grow up in the South, you're raised knowing that mac and cheese is a vegetable, and it's when you leave the comforts of the South that you realize that's not true. But yeah, I'm in Boulder, Colorado, and I am a scientist, actually. I have a science background for the last 15 or so years, and most recently doing climate research support. And I kind of got into nutrition and health about 5 years ago when I had my own health crisis of sorts. You know, you always have those things in your life that cause you to do research and know what the heck's going on and what do I not know about a certain topic. So for me, it was just looking into ways of having more energy. And I realized I had been a vegetarian for 12 years up to that point. And for me, it was really an eye-opening time when I realized that I just wasn't the vibrant health that I used to have. And it wasn't, and it was because I wasn't eating a good vegetarian diet. I was eating a lot of junk food, a lot of fast food, a lot of processed food. And at that point, I really started to look at my diet and say, well, what should I be eating? And started to listen to my body. And so that, I think, is a big piece of finding happiness through eating, you know, and eating your way to happiness is tuning into your body and asking your body, what does it want? I mean, it might tell you it wants a Big Mac and fries.
Mm-hmm,
but you know
mm-hmm.
that's what it wants. you know, it wants... you know, it wants nutrients. It wants to build bones and build blood and be healthy and detox. It just wants to do its job efficiently and effectively. And so once you start listening to what your body has to say and tuning into it through experiments of sorts that I'll talk about in a minute, you can really, you know, really find happiness through eating and realize that you've got just the key to success right there in your hands.
Well, so related to that then, do you want to expand a little bit about your philosophy that, you know, about food and wellness? And I have to say, I hadn't realized that you had a science background, and that's really interesting to me because I don't know if you know this about me, but I was very involved with raw food for a while, and I maintain a raw food website, and I knew intuitively that feeding my body less processed and less cooked food made sense, and I felt great while doing it, but I really felt that there was a lack of information out there that came from the scientific background. And again, I know you're not about raw food necessarily, but just the fact that you are coming at this with that background is really exciting for me because it means that you bring a whole new level of understanding to it.
Right. I certainly look at things and you know, decipher what does this really mean. And I mean, there's a lot of intuition, and that's part of my philosophy is looking at using your own intuition to guide you as to what is right for you. I mean, there's so many dietary philosophies out there that I think makes the field of nutrition so fascinating. It's also challenging because in nutrition, there's no black and white, right? I mean, you can have, taking your example of a raw foodist, you know, raw foodists, some of them can be very dictatorial about raw food only, you know, but that doesn't work for everybody. And so I think what's interesting about nutrition is that everyone is different and we're all bio-individuals. And so that's a huge component of finding what it is that is right for your body is figuring out, is just knowing and accepting that what works for your neighbor or your sister or your mother may not work for you. There might be pieces that do, but they may not. But also, you know, listening to your body again and tuning in to what that has to say. And by that, I don't mean like channeling somebody or anything. We are in Boulder, right? but what I mean is, you know, you're your greatest laboratory experiment. Your own body, you can feed and see, how do I feel after I ate that milkshake, or how do I feel after eating this raw salad? You know, some people, for example, do really well on cooked spinach, using spinach as an example. If it's cooked rather than raw, some people just have a hard time digesting raw spinach, you know. So it's just a variety of, you know, today, you know, if you're at the airport and you're eating the airport food, you can chalk that down as part of your experiment that now you know that you don't want to be drinking Diet Cokes and, you know, eating processed food while you before your six-hour flight to wherever you're going, you know.
That's
you know, that really brings
me,
up
I'm sorry, Ann. I wanted to jump in and talk to Betsy. You've been talking to her so long, I was getting jealous. Let me throw the number out there. Just in case anybody wants to call in, it's 877-695-7234. That's 877-NYK, stands for Now You Know Radio, 877-NYK-Radio. I've got a client, Betsy, that I do media production, and she does healthy eating and weight loss. And it's funny because, in fact, I've got a few weight loss clients, and I've kind of noticed that you'll never go hungry teaching people how to lose weight because it's an epidemic, right? Everybody in America needs to learn how to lose weight. And so if you've got an idea, it doesn't matter how crazy it is, there's someone out there that's going to listen to you. My particular client, I'm going to tell you her name in a minute because I'm going to use one of her lines, and I don't want to use her line without giving proper credit. But she says in her class, it's very much healthy eating and exactly kind of what you're talking about. And she has a great line. She says, your body knows how to be a body. And what we do in America particularly is we kind of fight the natural instincts that we have, and we just push all this processed food into us, all this fatty, greasy food that your body does not want, and it will tell you that it does not want that in a variety of ways. But if we actually listen to our body, pay attention to what we need, then you know, everything kind of harmonizes out, and it works well. And her name is Marsha Upson. She's got a program called Naturally Slim. She does a great job, particularly in the local area here in Dallas. But I just find that interesting to hear it from you, someone else, now the same kind of principle that listen to your body, find out what it wants, which is going to be a little bit different necessarily than somebody else, and then you can get into kind of a healthy lifestyle.
Right, exactly.
Now can I ask my question?
You're up, Ann.
Because it's perfect. You just set me up so well, Brian. Thank you. And also, I know we already have at least one caller waiting to ask you a question, too. So I'm not going to hog you all to myself. But this so perfectly follows up what Brian said. So here's my question. And you mentioned, Betsy, you know, eating, someone eats a milkshake, and then how did they feel after that? And so here's my question. Why do people continue to eat things that they know make them feel bad? After that person has that milkshake and they feel so heavy and bloated and tired, why do they go out and have another milkshake?
That's a really, really great question.
Because the second one is 50%. It's half off. Buy one, get one half off.
There you go. Yeah, you know, I think there's a lot of levels to that. Some people may not be in tune to their body. Some people may have been eating the same diet for so many years that they think that that's how they're supposed to feel. I drink a milkshake, my stomach hurts a little bit, but that's the way I feel after a milkshake. So it's not abnormal. That's their norm. You know, what feels right to them is skewed because they've been eating processed foods for so long and haven't maybe experienced the optimum health that they can experience. You know, the other part of it is maybe denial. You know, I don't feel well after that, but I don't mind getting gas and bloating once a month or every couple times whenever I have a milkshake. Or they don't realize the impact that it has on their health and that they could be feeling even better. When I was eating my junk food diet, I just didn't have a lot of energy, but I was in my 20s, so I had, you know, boundless stores of energy that you don't have later in life once you leave your 20s and your college years, right? And so the diet that I was eating, although it wasn't really great for me, I didn't notice it really until, you know, it took a while until I started just investigating how other people were eating and like, oh, well, maybe I do need to eat organics, for example, or maybe meat would be a good thing for me in particular. Maybe it's, you know, but vegetarianism is fine for some people, you know, just not for others.
Well, let's see what our audience has to say about this. We've got a caller. If you want to call in, remember, it's 877-NYK-RADIO. It's 877-695-7234. We'd like to bring Rob on the line. Rob, you've got something you want to ask Betsy? Go ahead.
I sure do. So I've experienced something that I call eating without thinking while working.
That's an acronym.
Well, I just made up that term while I was thinking about my question. But something that I've noticed is that people at work who would otherwise be rational, normal human beings tend to, get stressed at work. They're thinking about work, and they start eating things that are at work because there's food all over the workplace. They've got the infinite coffee, there's the infinite chocolate, there's all kinds of things, pretzels. And in my last job, I know that I put on weight while I was at that job, and when I left that job, I lost the weight. And I think a large part of gaining that weight was what I call doing the eating without thinking, just because I'm busy. And it seems to me that there's a large sort of psychological stress factor here that just goes beyond, because I'm familiar with what proper nutrition is. I'm a pretty smart guy. I've got a scientific background. I understand about thermodynamics, and yet I fell prey to this. And I was wondering, what you would recommend to help, avoid this type of a trap in the future.
Sure.
I mean, I look around at where I'm working now, and just to let you know, I'm in the process of making a lasagna that I'm going to be bringing into the office tomorrow. So
are you making a healthy lasagna to help your co-workers, or are you sabotaging them so that you'll look better by comparison?
This is full fat lasagna with sausage and ricotta cheese and mozzarella cheese and Kalamata olives. It's but it's really
where do you
about...
work? Can I make it there by tomorrow?
So lasagna and infinite chocolate. He's working somewhere that has infinite chocolate. I want in.
But in any case, I don't think there's necessarily anything wrong with lasagna as long as one person doesn't eat all 10 pounds. But getting back to the main question, what are your thoughts on that?
Sure. I think that's a really great question, Rob. I think that, people eat without thinking. Are you talking about typically like mid to late afternoon or all throughout the day?
I see people at work, they're munching all day long. They got the snack bowls, the drinks with the sugar,
right,
going all day.
Right. Well, I think that part of it is, for some people, it could be boredom. you're in the same job day in, day out. You just kind of get bored, and you're staring at your computer, and you're just trying to do something else at the same time. And so I think sometimes for some people, eating is that. It's a boredom thing. It's definitely... also, a psychological thing, as you mentioned. Oftentimes when we eat things that we know we shouldn't, or even just mindless eating, it's due to perhaps we're missing something fulfilling in our lives. Something that I work with my clients on is looking at not only the food that they eat, physically that they put into their mouths, but also the primary food, the food that nourishes the soul. So, things like, are you happy in your career? Are you enjoying your relationships? Do you have a spiritual practice that keeps your soul full? Are you exercising? Those kind of things. So I think sometimes when people do this mindless eating, it's because they are bored. They're just missing another piece of their life, that would give them happiness. And also it could be that they have a craving that they aren't realizing that they're having. And instead of eating the junk food that's around, maybe replacing the junk food in the office with getting rid of the sodas and having water coolers at every corner and getting rid of the vending machines and having healthier snacks like nuts or cheese or fruits and veggies, that kind of thing, instead of the vending machine chips and sodas and cookies would also help.
Well, what I find interesting, and I don't know if this is just me, Betsy, you probably have a perspective on this, is how much of our eating is just driven by habit. I was noticing this over the weekend. By Sunday night, I just felt awful. My head was hurting. I felt really bad. And my wife said, you had an awful lot of caffeine this weekend. And I started thinking about that. And during the week, I don't drink caffeine. I just drink water at work. That's the habit I'm in. Well, on the weekend, I don't have a habit, and we go out, and I'll get a Coke, I'll get a tea, and that kind of thing. So Rob's asking about people eating at work, and I don't know if he mentioned this in his question, but Rob, do you think that it's also habitual? People just get used to that? Maybe if they change their habits, it'll improve. Betsy, what do you think about that? Rob, is that kind of what you were asking?
Well, I think that's part of it. I mean, I've seen people, you know, they have their morning coffee with sugar. They have their and then it's like every so many hours, the coffee with sugar, and by the end of the day, they've consumed hundreds of calories of sugar. So that's certainly part of it. I think that is part of my question. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. I think that a lot of eating is driven by habit, particularly in the workplace where maybe the only break you get is to go across the street to get a coffee, you know, and you get that break, you get that downtime, that socialization time. That's a lot of people really enjoy that break. I, for one, I love taking that break, but I never get coffee. I love to go in the coffee shop and smell it, and that's as good. That's all I need, because I know that for me, if I start drinking coffee or, you know, have sugar in coffee, it just doesn't treat me well. I get jittery. I can't focus. So I think, yeah, a lot of it is habit, like you were saying, Brian, that, you know, during the week, it sounds like you're in your workplace surrounded by water, and so you drink that a lot, but then you're distracted on the weekend, and so you're not maybe paying as much attention to your body and your body's needs on the weekend as you are during the week, something like that. And I think that plays a role in it as well.
Well, Betsy, you know, I so can relate to the smell of coffee, walking in and smelling that smell, because it's so awesome. But that's a different smell. That's smelling, a different show, that's smelling your way to happiness. And we're going to talk more about eating your way to happiness. And so I'd really like to focus back on that, if you don't mind, and ask you sort of what your top three recommendations or examples or top three somethings, if you will, whatever you want, really, that relate to eating your way to happiness. Because I want to know how to do that.
Right, right. Sure. That's a great question. So my top three would be eating sweet vegetables, and I'll just list them here for you real quick. Drinking more water,
mm-hmm.
and practicing cooking. Those would be my top three. And why I chose those would be sweet vegetables is something that many people in our society really don't have a lot of. Everyone has cravings for sweets, right? We're all having that sweet tooth, craving that sugary coffee or that little chocolate or many chocolates at 2 or 3 p.m. at the workplace, wanting that lift. And part of that is these sugar cravings that we have that are so common for us are due to the fact that we as humans are programmed to want sweet flavors. For example, from birth, we get breast milk if you're breastfed, and that is a sweet milk. It tastes sweet. And so from that instance on, we learn that sweet is associated with good, with filling, with nurturing. There's a lot of things in nature that have sweet flavors that aren't loaded in sugar. So the top things I like to tell my clients regarding dealing with their sugar cravings, and therefore when you're dealing with that sugar craving, you're going to eat your way to happiness, is incorporating sweet foods into the diet that are naturally sweet. So one of my clients, I told her this, and she went out and bought peppers. She got yellow peppers and orange peppers and red peppers, and she snacks on those during the day. That gives her that sweet taste in her mouth that she's really craving, and she doesn't need to go to the vending machine at 3 o'clock for a Snickers bar. You know, things like onions, like sweet potatoes and yams, you know, stuff
like
that.
Did you say
that.
Onions?
Onions, yeah. You know about caramelizing onions, right? When you cook onions,
oh,
down,
yeah, okay.
A sweet flavor. So there's so many things that we can eat that are sweet that if we incorporate them into our diet regularly, you know, daily, then that's going to decrease your cravings for those sweet treats at the end of the day or whenever it is, and will prevent you from going through that sugar craving, and then you go on a sugar high, and then you've got the sugar crash afterwards. And that sucks. That's not happiness.
No, that's a horrible feeling. And I've been a sugarholic at many points in my life, and it, you know, that drop after you just, you know, pound the cookies or the cake, you know, it's real. And I remember reading, and I just checked to make sure my numbers were still correct. You know, it's interesting when you think back to history, and it wasn't too long ago, just a couple hundred years, where sugar was very, very rare. And for families to get sugar, you know, they would buy that kind of cone sugar and scrape a little bit off here and there. And one person would basically eat about 5 pounds of sugar a year. Well, now today, the average person is getting that same amount in about a week and a half. I mean, that blows my mind, right?
Yeah.
And so the addiction to sugar that we have is real, and it's not. And then when I read that, I decided, well, let's see exactly where this is coming from. And it's not just downing Cokes and eating Snicker bars and eating cakes. You go look at any processed food, and there's a tremendous amount of sugar in these things. Things that doesn't even make sense for there to be sugar in, like hamburger patties, they just load them up with sugar in it because, like you say, we got that sweet tooth taste that we always wanted, and it just blows my mind how prevalent sugar is and how that completely affects us.
And it's a great marketing tool, right? I mean, if you buy a burger patty and it's sweet and you're subconsciously, I mean, you're not realizing that I like this because it's sweet. You're just like, oh, I really like this patty. Well, it's probably because it's sweet, and you're getting some sugar from it, and then you're going to go buy it again. Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Well,
go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead, Ann.
We actually have a question that's come in from Twitter, but first I want to tell you, I guess this won't really count because it's not a sweet vegetable, but one of my favorite sweet things when I'm really craving something sweet, it's a fruit, so I'd love to have you tell me actually why this is not as good as a sweet vegetable, but I love taking organic dates and pinning them and then drizzling a little bit of raw honey over them and sprinkling a little bit of cinnamon and then warming them gently in my dehydrator, and they get all warm and gooey, and it tastes like baklava, and it's amazing. So I just had to tell you that because that's my little special
treat. That
sounds
so good.
But it's not a vegetable. So am I right in thinking that because the sugar content of dates is so high that really that's not as ideal a sweet treat as one of the sweet vegetables?
You know, that's a good question too. And I think that with sweet vegetables, it's something you can just incorporate into your lunch, right? You're not really thinking, I'm going to have my sweet treat now. You're just like, I'm going to have my bell pepper or my squash or my beets or whatever it is. But with dates, and that sounds so good. Now I'm hungry for dates with honey. that's sure, it has more sugar in it than, say, a bell pepper or a sweet potato. However, it's a much, much better alternative than anything that's processed. So I wouldn't tell you to stop doing that. A part of eating your way to happiness is also enjoying what you eat. And so if you're on, you know, if I were to tell you you've got to stop eating your dates drizzled with honey, then you're not going to like me very much. And you may not want to stop eating your dates with honey. And I wouldn't tell you that because if you're enjoying it and, you know, the way you just described the food to me shows me that you are paying attention to what it is you eat. I mean, you put the honey on it, you put it in your dehydrator, it gets warm and gooey. And so it's you're really being mindful about what you're putting into your body, and you're making a connection to your food. It's when we're out and about and we're like, you know, running through a drive-thru because, oh, I need an ice cream cone because I have a taste for sugar in my mouth. You're disconnecting yourself from the food, and you're not really paying attention to your body.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does make sense. And, you know, it's funny because even things that completely make sense on paper and are completely logical seem to be really difficult to do in real life sometimes. And I find myself struggling with that, you know, all the time.
Yeah.
We were brought up with the fast food and all this kind of stuff, and it, you know, we basically ate whatever we wanted. My wife's upbringing was much more on the healthy side of things. She listens to her body, she eats good things, and she would love to change me, but she doesn't know how to do that. And Betsy has called in and has a question similar to that. Betsy, you
actually,
were here.
Betsy is our expert.
I'm sorry, Sandy. Sandy is called in. And I got too many women here. I can't keep them all straight. Sandy has called in and would like to talk to Betsy. Sandy, it's yours.
Yeah, so that's sort of my question. So if I'm making healthy decisions for myself, that's one thing. But how do I – do you have any hints for convincing the rest of the family for kind of doing an overhaul of changing the diet for the whole family, and especially if there's picky eaters in the house?
How old are your picky eaters? Or is it your husband?
my biggest eater is 8 years old.
You know, that's a tough one, and I'm sure that you know that. With kids and picky eaters, I think that it's a slow go. I think that if you can take it one step at a time without making a big deal out of it, but just replace make healthier replacements into the diet. So I don't know, what's a typical meal that your 8-year-old likes?
Well, they like to snack when they get home from school on things that aren't necessarily healthy, like chips and mm-hmm. muffins and chocolate muffins and things like that. And mm-hmm. we do have processed food in the house, and I'd like to step away from that and just start bringing in some healthier things. But in trying to do that, sometimes those things are just nobody wants to try them. Or even, you know, they just look at them and say, oh, you know, I know I don't like that, even without taking a taste test. So,
right.
So it would be great to be able to try and kind of overhaul the whole family's diet generally and maybe slowly introducing that type of thing in.
Yeah, I think what works really well is crowding out. So the concept of not restricting yourself, but crowding out the bad food. So starting to offer just having healthier options available. I know with infants, if you think back to when your kids were babies and starting to eat food, there was a rule of like you had to introduce a food 3 to 5 times before an infant would actually start to accept it. And I think with kids it's similar. You know, if you you bring out a new food and they've never seen it, their friends don't eat it, you know, and it's a fresh, you know, fresh food, fresh vegetables, whatever, they're going to have to be around it for several times before, you know, maybe they would want to try it. It might be if they have a favorite, I think bringing things in slowly is a good thing. So, like, if they have a sweet tooth, there's, like, having carrot sticks. Okay, boring, right? But having a sweet dip that, like, homemade caramel dip, okay, that's going to have a lot of sugar in it, but maybe it's going to be a step in the right direction to get your kids to eat carrots, and then you can cut back on the caramel dip and start adding more veggies along the way. But, you know, and then, too, if you're the one who's buying the food for the household, just starting off slowly by buying less and less of the processed food that they gravitate to and having more and more, like, nuts or, here's an odd thing that I find that kids really like instead of chips is baked seaweed, seaweed chips, and you can get them at Whole Foods. There's a brand called Sea's Gift, S-E-A, Sea's Gift, and they make this roasted nori seaweed that's crunchy, it's salty, but it's not a potato chip, and it's full of all sorts of goodness from the sea, just full of great minerals from the sea, super healthy for kids, and crunchy and salty, you know. So it's green. That could be weird. But then again, kids are eating those blue Go-Gurt tube things, so I don't know.
You hit it on
well,
the
I
head
guess,
with the blue.
That's right. Depending on the kids, the seaweed chips could be a selling point. That might be all you have to say to them, and they'll just start downing those things.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think, too, if you start changing the way you're cooking, for your family. A neat thing that you can do to allow your kids and your picky eaters to customize items is to give them condiments to choose from. Condiments such as the standard of ketchup and mustard, but also condiments like sesame seeds or, tahini sauce or ginger, powdered ginger, curry powder, seeds, Parmesan cheese, you know. So if you're making a dish for everybody, you can make it kind of without as many spices, and that's healthy, and then allow them to take these little flavorful things and conduct their own test as to what they think tastes best with this chicken that you cooked. You know, they can flavor it up themselves and make it exciting and personalized, and that might get them beyond the, oh, this is healthy, but into the, wow, this is kind of fun.
Those are great.
Does that help?
You know, I'm wondering also, Sandy, you mentioned like the chocolate muffins, and so Betsy, I'm wondering if one good strategy would be to take the things that they really like already and make homemade versions with them, have them get involved in cooking them, and then you're using, you know, organic ingredients or what have you, and you can sort of make them more healthful just because there's not going to be high fructose corn syrup and, you know, dyes with numbers in the name and things like that as a way to start getting them more involved. Also, just because I know it's fun because kids like to cook. But so I'm wondering if that's a way as well. Even chips, you know, I have a son who's 12, and he loves to experiment making his own baked potato chips. And you know what? They don't always come out. Sometimes they do, but they're always a lot more healthful than a bag of chips.
There you go.
That's a
great
suggestion, too. Yeah, thank you.
You can take, on the note of making your own potato chips, you can take kale, the green leafy vegetable kale, and rub that with some, cut it up into strips or what bite-sized pieces, rub some olive oil on it and sprinkle some sea salt, put it in the oven, and bake that, and you'll have a nice crispy chip. I have a recipe for that on my website, which is www.forkintheroadwellness.com. That's www.forkintheroadwellness.com. And there's a recipe on there for that that you could check out. Another thing, getting back to the top three items that you had asked about earlier, and drinking water is a really great thing, and I would recommend that whenever you have a craving, you know, back to Rob's question about about eating mindlessly at work, whenever you feel like you're reaching for something that you're not actually hungry, but you just want something in your mouth, try drinking water, because oftentimes we're dehydrated. Americans are typically chronically dehydrated, and so when your children get home from school, give them a glass of water. Drink this before you eat anything, because the hunger that they might be feeling, may be that they're thirsty. Thirst actually shows itself as hunger pangs, and that's what it feels like when you're dehydrated. And so your body, you think that you're hungry, but you're actually thirsty. So that's something else to do to get liquids into them and get them nourished through water.
All right, well, thanks for calling, Sandy. We appreciate it. We will talk to you later.
Bye.
Well, that was an interesting question because, like Sandy, you know, my wife is really trying to get the entire family into eating healthy, and it was interesting thinking about, you know, the kids, getting the kids involved, because all yesterday, I mean, from like 1 o'clock to 8 o'clock, my wife and my 6-year-old daughter were in the kitchen cooking. And they were just trying recipes, and of course my wife's doing everything real healthy, but my 6-year-old loved it. She was so into it, and they were just looking for new ways to make things healthy, and at the end of the day we had this incredible dinner of about 8 different dishes, but they were all, you know, really healthy, really good for you things, and she loved it. She loved every minute of it. So you definitely can, I guess, get your kids involved. You just have to, you know, find a way that interests them and then kind of let them go.
Yeah, and that follows, that leads into my third tip, which was practicing cooking, because I say that because it's kind of a lost art form sometimes in our households, it seems, with, you know, the busyness of parents working two jobs or or, you know, one parent working full-time and the other parent is home all day with the child, with the children, that cooking just kind of takes a back seat. And practicing cooking allows you to reconnect with your food, to see where it comes from, to experience community, especially, as you said, Brian, of when you get your kids involved. And it also allows you to be creative. And I think oftentimes, you know, with children, kids are encouraged to do art when they're in elementary school and a little bit through middle school. But at some point in middle school or high school, kids stop doing artwork, typically because their peer said, your drawing looks horrible. And so they get discouraged and they don't pursue it. And so kids lose a lot of creative outlets as they get older. And practicing cooking, bringing that back into the home and on a regular basis, allows adults and kids to get creative and try things out. Like I said, with the condiments, it could be something as simple as that. Or it could be like your family did, of cooking 8 different healthy things and just seeing how it turned out. Or the baked potato chips and seeing what that experiment leads to.
Yeah.
I think that definitely leads to happiness.
Well, it certainly did yesterday. It was an enjoyable time for my wife and daughter. Let's say hello to Evan, who's on the line and has a question for you, Betsy. Hi, Evan.
Hello. Hi, Betsy. I had a question about a suggestion you made earlier, and it really just kind of ties into the basic theme of the show, which is eating your way to happiness. I mean, so if you're going to eat your way to happiness, presumably that means that it's kind of like idiosyncratic to the individual, like each person kind of has their own regimen that makes them happy. But that's kind of conflicts with what I've always been told about, you know, your dietary needs, that they're kind of, you know, there's a fact of the matter about what's healthy to eat, what everybody should eat. So, I mean, to what degree are people really that variable? I mean, does one person need to eat that much different from another person in order to attain happiness? Like, how much do people's diets need to vary, I guess, is pretty much my basic question. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. There are certainly, you know, the USDA certainly puts out minimum guidelines for vitamins and nutrients we should be eating, but those are certainly minimum, and those were developed so that you don't develop scurvy or rickets or those diseases that are based on not getting enough vitamin C or not getting enough vitamin D. And so beyond that, from our government, you know, there's a lot of flexibility and a lot of room for growth. I think what's important in making your diet individual to your own body type and your own personal taste is that, you know, you are different, and, you know, whether a lot of it can be related to your upbringing and your ancestral lineage. For example, you know, people whose ancestors lived in Europe where they drank a lot of milk would be able to tolerate milk drinking today. You know, if you're from a family of European descent, then milk may be something that you can handle, just to illustrate this point. But if you're of African descent, where not many people have herds of cattle, you know, it's not as prevalent like it is in Europe, then you may be lactose intolerant. So that speaks to some differences in people's, you know, ability to handle various foods. And some people are just predispositioned to eat well or to handle certain foods well and others not. You know, in terms of minimum nutrients, sure, there's a scientific basis for, you know, how many calories are appropriate for people to eat each day. You know, I think 1,500 to 2,000 is kind of what the USDA goes on. And so that's a guideline, but to take it a step further and personalize it for you just gives you the ability to make it more fun and make it your own. I mean, you're going to be eating, you know, your whole life for 80 years, and so enjoy it. That's kind of my thought on that, is find what you like and find what makes your body healthy and enjoy it. And know, too, that can change over time. You know, one way of eating might work for you for several years, and then you might find that you might need to add a certain food group more heavily back into your diet or just change it as time goes on, because we're dynamic people and our bodies are changing and going through cycles. Did that answer your question?
Yeah, that was great. I didn't realize people were quite that different, really.
All right.
Yeah.
Thanks for calling, Evan. We appreciate it.
Yeah, you bet.
Thanks.
And unfortunately, I apparently am not blessed with the body type that requires pizza and chocolate chip cookies all the time. So I've got to figure out what my body type requires. But I know it's not that. I'm going through the process of elimination. We're checking to see what doesn't work, and then whatever remains is good for me. So, hey, give us a call. We've got Betsy for another 15. I'm sorry, Ann. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was just going to, I'm thinking that we should test to see if our body type is the type that needs some of that yummy-sounding lasagna that the caller Rob was making.
Yeah, I don't think it's quite fair to go to the lasagna you're making and not share it with the hosts. I mean, that's just rude.
Type it in.
All right, we've got Betsy for about 15 more minutes, so if you want to give us a call, do that at 877-NYK-RADIO. That's Now You Know Radio, 877-695-7234. And, Ann, I get giddy when this happens, but I understand we have a tweet.
Yes, we've been tweeted. And again, you can also tweet us your questions at Now You Know Radio on Twitter. And the question we got from the Twitter sphere, if you will, is, Betsy, do you think vegans and vegetarians can get all the nutrition they need? And what are your recommendations for them?
You know, that's a tough one. I think that I like to look at traditional people's diets and what traditional people ate before the westernization and the industrialization of the world. And there's been some studies that have been done back in the 1930s where people have gone to indigenous cultures across the globe to see, to find who the healthiest people are in the world. And what was found is that the people who had the most robust health were exhibited characteristics of really healthy teeth, no dental cavities, no crooked teeth, enough room for their teeth, which is...
You're talking about Weston Price.
I am talking about Weston Price. You know him? Yeah, he
well,
is
not personally, but I've read, yes, it's amazing.
Right, and so he's a dentist. He was who in the 30s traveled around the world because he was curious why his patients here in America were, you know, having all this disease of their teeth. And so he wondered, well, what does good health look like? And so these traditional populations that he found all had many things in common. They all ate some form of animal foods. They ate a diet that was really high in vitamins A and D. That are fat soluble vitamins that you get from animal products. They consumed, you know, obviously they didn't consume refined ingredients. They didn't have high fructose corn syrup, white flour, pasteurized milk, skim milk, vegetable oils, synthetic vitamins, anything like that. And they also cultured their foods, which means they fermented their foods to make them keep longer. And when you do that, when you ferment with something called lactobacillus bacteria, then that adds lactic acid to foods and it preserves it. And it also gives you, and when you eat it, such as sauerkraut, which is a traditional fermented food, not made with vinegar like it is today in the industrialization of the product, you get all sorts of great probiotics and enzymes into your diet as well. And so those were the characteristics of traditional diets. He didn't find any cultures that were vegan or vegetarian. They did eat some animal products, whether, you know, some people would eat maybe less meat, but they would get seafood or that kind of thing. So I think with, you know, I definitely respect people who are vegan and vegetarian because I know it being an attempted vegetarian that it's a lot of work to you know, just be mindful in that way of what you're eating. And you really have to be careful when you're a vegan of getting all your nutrients. So I think it takes the right mindset to do it. And you just have to be really careful. Vitamin B12, from what I've read, you cannot get from plant sources, although, or I'm sorry, your body doesn't use it as efficiently when it's from plant sources. So B12 is a vitamin that is really easy to assimilate from animal sources. So that's kind of my caution for vegans and vegetarians, that you just have to be really careful about what you're eating and make sure you're getting all the nutrients. And check in with your body to see, are you feeling well on it? I was, you know, speaking personally, I was a vegetarian for ethical reasons, not for health reasons. That was my reasoning. And so what I was putting in my body was not good food. It was not animal products. I did eat fish and eggs, but it was just not healthy food. And so I think that if you're thinking about the vegan or vegetarian lifestyle, you need to check in with yourself periodically and say, you know, am I feeling well? You know, am I feeling healthy? Do I have energy? And just see how that goes. Oftentimes when people do a raw foods diet, you know, or a vegan diet for cleansing, that they feel really, really great. But then if their bodies aren't really suited for that diet, they can't sustain it. They just don't feel energized from it. So I think that's a big part of it, is just looking at do you feel healthy? And I don't mean to, I keep talking about raw foods. I love raw foods, Anne. I'm not knocking it at all. I think it's wonderful. but I think it's, you know, I just think that those are the questions you need to ask. In addition to, can I, you know, am I able to get all my nutrients from it? Just, you know, making sure you do feel healthy.
You know, I actually wanted to say that I don't know if you know about this product, and being that you're also in Boulder, I know that it's something available here. There's a company called Rejuvenate, and they put out a raw, properly fermented sauerkraut that actually is fermented the old-fashioned way with the good bacteria, and they also have a sea vegetable kimchi done the same way, and I've been eating that, and it's wonderful. I just wanted to let you know about that in case you didn't, because that's very exciting to find that kind of sauerkraut properly fermented. And we have a question from the chat room, and that question is from Karen, and she wants to know that it's sort of a clarification. So basically your philosophy for nutrition is stop and pay attention to your body and eat less junk.
Yes.
Would you say that kind of sums up at least part of your philosophy?
That sums it up, yeah. Pay attention, eat less junk, drink more water. At increased sweet vegetables, leafy green vegetables, and then also pay attention to your lifestyle. Find relationships that nurture and support you. Find physical activity that you enjoy and love. Find work that you enjoy, or at least figure out a way to enjoy the work that you're already doing. And developing some sort of spiritual practice that feeds your soul. So I would add those to it. But yeah. Good summary.
Hey, let me ask this, because like in many things, Anne and I are just diametrically opposed in our environments. And I grew up on a Whataburger and McDonald's, right? This is what my parents gave me to eat. So when you talk about the raw food diet, I'm thinking about sitting down with steak tartare and eating that. And I know that's not what you guys are talking about. So is it just not using processed foods and that kind of thing? You can still cook your carrots, right? You don't have to eat them raw, but tell me exactly what the raw diet is.
Anne, I'll defer to you.
okay. That's actually why I started my raw food website, which is adventuresinrawfood.com, because when I was looking to start investigating going raw or more raw, what I found on the internet was actually pretty militant. And Brian, it really was, you know, don't cook anything. Your carrots are completely raw. All your food is raw. Most raw food people are vegetarian or vegan. There are some people that do eat meat and they eat it raw. But my philosophy was that, you know, however much more towards the path of less processed food I could go and I could bring my family, the better. And so I felt that it wasn't necessary to be 100% raw, which is what many of these militant raw websites made you feel. And so my definition of raw food is less or least processed food. And really, raw food is a misnomer in itself, because the vast majority of people who are even 100% raw, you actually do heat your food at times, but the philosophy is that as long as you don't heat it above 115 degrees, some people say 110, you're not killing the really healthy nutrients that are in there. So you gently warm it. So that's really the concept, is that your food is not processed above 110 or 115 degrees. And my philosophy is just eating more, less processed food.
Well, that's, I think, what I think what our family's trying to do is the less processed diet. And maybe over time, you know, that you move more towards the raw diet. I don't know. But right now, day to day, we're just trying to look for ways to cut out as much processed food as possible from our diet. And I have to think that's at least a good step, even if it's not quite a big step as the raw diet is.
Right, and you know, traditional people often consumed some of their food in the raw form, raw meat, raw fish, raw milk, raw dairy products. So
yeah, my wife's about to start doing that raw dairy stuff. We went to a farm a couple of weeks ago with a homeschool field trip. I got to milk a goat for the first time and for the only
Yay!
Time. Yeah, it was very exciting. It was actually pretty embarrassing because I went up to the goat. I was one of the first ones, and the guy told me where to hold the squeeze, and I started doing it, and the guy said, well, you're doing great. And I turn around to this group of homeschool moms, and I say with a smirk, yeah, I know what I'm doing. And I tell you, their faces, you would have thought that, I mean, it was the worst thing I could have said in my life in front of all these kids, and it was just very embarrassing. But I do know how to milk a goat. I tasted the goat's milk. And I didn't like it. So I think if it's raw milk, it's something I'm going to have to get used to, because it does taste very different than the pasteurized skim milk that I grew up on.
Definitely. And it's really good for you. I mean, it contains lactase, which is an enzyme that helps you digest lactose. And people who are, you know, when you pasteurize milk, you lose that. You lose the enzymes. Those are killed off. And so you just have lactose, maybe a little bit of lactase in the milk and pasteurized milk. But in raw milk, you've got the lactase in there. It's good for people who are somewhat lactose intolerant or, you know, don't do so well with lactose. If they start drinking raw milk, they can handle it and tolerate it.
Now, Betsy, we only have a couple more minutes, and I know that we have one more caller who wants to talk to you, and so I'm going to defer to Brian to bring that caller on if he's ready. And do you have anything you'd like to get out there?
Perfect. So, yeah, I do. I wanted just to say that one thing, we've talked about so many things and so many great tips for you to improve your diet and lifestyle, but what I provide in my counseling practice is support, the ongoing support to help you reach those goals. You know, you go to training classes, you learn a few things, you put your notes in a notebook on the shelf, and you forget about it. So that's something that I offer to folks as support, and I do offer a free initial consultation if you'd like to learn more about my practice. I've got openings for individual clients beginning in September, and if you're local in the Boulder area, I have a local group program that's starting in September as well. So if you visit my website, forkintheroadwellness.com, you can find information about that.
That sounds awesome, and we will have a link up on our site to your site. And very, very quickly, can we bring in this last caller? We only have literally a minute and 10 seconds.
Okay, Jessica, we don't have much time, but you wanted to ask her a question about urban agriculture.
Yes, here in California, it's a spreading trend, and it's something I'm a 13-year vegetarian and mostly raw foodist, as is my fiance, and it's something that we've seriously considered, you know, keeping our own chickens and having happy eggs, and it's something that's really growing here in California, and I'm just wondering if you're seeing it as a trend in Colorado.
Definitely, definitely. I just met a woman who keeps chickens in her backyard down the street from me, and she can't do it here, but I want to do a co-op with her so we can do it together. But yeah, definitely, urban agriculture is definitely on Colorado.
All right, well, we want to thank everybody for calling in. Thank you, Betsy, so much for being with us today. Really eye-opening stuff and interesting things to learn about with listening to your body and being healthy. Put up all your links on our show notes page. everybody can join us next week for another Now You Know.
Thanks. I enjoyed it. It was a pleasure being on.
Thank you, Betsy. It's been wonderful.